Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. Coleman Nocter joins us once again. Coleman, very good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Sean.
First question is this. My 9-year-old insisted on me buying him a particular video game. It was 18s and is violent and scary. However, he pressurized me into buying it. Now he's suffering from nightmares. What should I do? Almost a rhetorical question,
yeah.
I think, really.
This is a real issue. I have to say, in the last few years, you really get this coming up a lot. Children are not cognitively able. For some reason, I think parents feel that a video game isn't as bad as a movie or something. There's some fuzzy logic there that these 18-rated games, because you're in control of the first-person shooter or whatever it is that you're doing, that it can't be that bad. The difficulty is children who are that age can't decipher between reality and fantasy. And so they will believe, not that the game is real, but it will have a much more real impact on them. And they haven't got the cognitive capacity to separate that. So the fact that it would haunt their dreams or that they'd get restless or disturbed by it is... It's common. I would have often seen that over the years with a child who watches a movie that's particularly scary. It might keep them up for a few nights and things like that. First of all, don't let them play the game again. Unfortunately, I think, and for parents out there, I think, you know, oftentimes the first parent to crack in a fifth class group to get the over 18s game, the pester power becomes huge on the other parents to crack as well and give it. I really think the parents need to hold their ground about that. I think we underestimate perhaps what psychological issues can arise from children playing these first-person shooter games and things like that. So, in this case, it's been done. So I would just limit his exposure to that, try and get more age-related activities involved in his life, and hopefully he'll move on and his sleep will start to improve over time. But it's a message to other parents out there that we need to really be careful about what children are exposed to, especially in the gaming industry.
But is there an additional difficulty here in the sense that, you know, you're trying to put the genie back in the box?
Yeah.
You gave in and now you're going to have to change your policy towards this 9-year-old.
Yeah, and again, I think it's much harder to pull back on things that you've done than prevent them. But in this case, this is more than likely to be a temporary thing that the child over time will soon move on from and forget and probably develop a resilience against. But I would certainly be pulling back on the any more over 18s games. I think that's probably a lesson learned in that fact. But although it's more difficult, I think it is important that rule applies in households, to be honest. It is something that's coming up an awful lot more in the last couple of years than ever before.
Yeah. We are planning on selling our home and moving to Cork, and the auctioneer is coming on Friday to take pictures. We haven't told our 2 children yet. Our little boy, who is 8, and our daughter is 6, and I would really love some advice on how to tell them what is happening. They are happy kids with good friends, and I feel quite guilty taking them away from this. My boy is a smart, sensitive child who really does not like change, and I feel he will find it the hardest. We're moving to my hometown, which they know well, and their cousins are there. Any advice would be greatly appreciated.
This is difficult. I mean, you don't want to overexpose children by telling them things too early. But again, I think, you know, best they know before the for sale sign goes up in the garden. They're 6 and 8, so they will have an ability. They're at the age of reason where they'll kind of know what's going on. This is going to be difficult for them. And I don't think there's a way of making it painless. They are going to move from an environment that's familiar into something that's not. The plus points are they're going somewhere where it's Cork, it's her home, so there would be a degree of familiarity to that. But this little boy may well not embrace this change. He may well struggle with it. I suppose just listen to him, support him with it, and give them a timeline, if possible, as to how long it's going to be. But I've never had a child sit in front of me in therapy and say, my parents told me too much information. It's oftentimes the other way around. When children are lied to or that they weren't told in time, that they tend to have an issue with it. But again, I think for parents, you don't want to be the one to drop this bomb and, you know, up... the upheaval that'll cause these children who are in school, have established friendships and things like that.
When they're that age, do they have a concept of forever, if you know what I mean?
Not a warped concept, by which I mean, forever.
We're moving to Cork, but will they, you know, when you're eight, will you think, oh, well, that means I'm never going to see any of my friends ever again, or I'm never going to, you know?
I think in some ways you can kind of soften that by saying, you know, you can stay in touch with your friends and we'll be back and, you know, that sorts of things. But for children, that is a big deal. I mean, to an eight-year-old, tomorrow is forever, you know, in terms of having to wait for that. So their concept of time is difficult. But I would try and sell the positives of it. But I wouldn't. One of the things that children really, if you're not acknowledging that it's difficult for them, they'll get more irritated by that. You know, by saying, I realise this disrupts you and I'm really sorry that it is happening, but we have to do it and we will survive it and we'll get through it, rather than saying, you know, what are you complaining about? Should there's a football team down there? And if you overhand that, maybe you don't give the child an opportunity to vent what they want to say about it. And it is discommoding for them, and they're entitled to be a bit disgruntled about it. It has to happen, it's going to happen. But I'd support them with it and hear what they have to say. But they'll survive this.
Of course.
Children who have multiple moves in early years can sometimes have difficulties, you know, sustaining with long-term friendships and relationships because they've been moved multiple times over their childhood. But one or two house moves isn't, it doesn't uproot things to a great extent.
And they are moving to a town where their grandparents are there and cousins are there.
Yeah. So, you know, again, there's a lot of selling points to it, which is good. But I would tell them now rather than later, give them time to adjust and prepare them for it.
My 2.5-year-old daughter gets very upset and starts sobbing her heart out when she hears sad or emotional music. It's becoming more and more regular. Have you ever come across this before, and what does it mean?
No, is the answer to that. But I suppose we have to. I'm always interested in people's view that toddlers don't take in any bad stuff; they only absorb good stuff. You know, you're taking a family's history, they'll say, "Oh, they were only three, so they didn't know anything that was happening about perhaps a bereavement or something." But children do pick up on atmosphere; they do pick up on tone and ambience. And it's not that your 2.5-year-old knows what this lady is singing about in melancholic songs, but they're picking up on the tone of it. And I know in my own children, you know, we used to put on, you know, Taylor Swift, Shake It Off, and they'd all dance around really happy, no matter, because the upbeatness of it. So it's natural to assume that the downbeat of it would oftentimes, they'd tune into that mood also. Do you know what I mean? But if she is having that, I suppose less Norah Jones and Adele and more Taylor Swift perhaps in the house might help that a little bit. But I think in terms of, it's certainly interesting that she can pick it up. She's obviously a child who's well attuned to the mood of people around her, which is good.
Would you just want to say, as a station at this time, we don't endorse any of Coleman Nocturne's musical recommendations? could it mean, though, the 2-year-old has a high level of emotional intelligence and that they can sense the tone of something?
Yeah, I mean, they're highly emotionally receptive, but there's a difference. Highly sensitive children are really interesting because they think things far more than others. So they'll absorb things and they get into things much more. And that makes them kind of ferociously good friends to have. They're really kind and considerate, but they carry so much. And I suppose even small children carrying the worries of their parents or people around them who pick up on these. You know, there's other children who are just oblivious and they go through life and they don't tend to get stressed about it. But a highly sensitive child, you know, to pick up on a tune in a music that song that's on that, and picking up that's sad and kind of that allowing you to be sad is that's a highly sensitive child, you know, in terms of to be able to do that. Emotional intelligence is how you develop to cope with emotionality rather than just being receptive of it.
Okay.
So children like that need more skills around emotional resilience to manage the wave of emotion with which they feel.
Mm-hmm. Just going back to the first question we had about buying the 9-year-old a video game. A lot of the reaction is as you might expect. Laura says, "What's the name of God? Has parents' ability to just tell a child that no means no? If I did anything like that as a child, you'd be told to get out and come back at tea time. We didn't dare defy our parents. It's called respect." Someone else says, "For God's sake, you're the parent. Learn to say no now, or you'll regret it when he's a teenager." Indeed. Then again, I suppose all parents make mistakes.
Don't underestimate the power of pester power, you know what I mean, in terms of, you know, every other kid in the class has this and I'm the only one, and, they're all talking about it and I don't know what they're talking about, and you're isolating me, and you know, you're turning, I have no friends because you won't buy me this, and you know, there's a volume of that stuff that goes on. And if you're at the receiving end of that for 3 or 4 weeks on the trot, you know, sometimes you just go, oh, get the game. But for me, it's not about that. You have to think about the cost of that, and you're not responsible for the other 29 children in their class, but you are responsible for your own child. So in a probably more politically correct way than your callers have said, yes, I think no is the answer to the video game question.
All right, we do have more questions for Coleman. We have to take a break first. Back in a couple of minutes. Coleman Nocter is still with us for our parenting slot. This question is, what is the consensus on letting babies cry it out to sleep? I have an 11-month-old son who sometimes settles himself to sleep, no problem, but sometimes it can take 15 to 20 minutes for him to settle. During this time, he will alternate between crying and being quiet or talking to himself. I'm really consistent with his routine, so I can't figure out why he settles fine sometimes and not other times. I also have a 2-year-old, so staying with him while he gets to sleep is just not an option, as he's too interested in what the 2-year-old is doing and obviously can't leave the 2-year-old unattended. I've had this problem with the 2-year-old. I've never had this problem with the 2-year-old. He just slept. I feel so guilty and stressed for those 15 or 20 minutes when he's trying to sleep. I can't help feeling I'm damaging him in some way.
Okay, the first part of that question is there a consensus, or what's the consensus? The answer is there isn't one. I think people will have different views on whether you let children cry it out or not. Some people feel very passionately about that as well. But my view on it, the reasons why his sleeping pattern is mixed could be a number of things. He's 11 months, so he could be getting teeth or anything that would mean on certain nights he struggles a bit more to get off than others. The other thing is 15 or 20 minutes is not an awful lot of time in terms of some children's, the amount of time it takes some children to fall off asleep. So it seems quite manageable. The fact that he's talking in between the time that he's crying would suggest that he's not overly distressed. Mm. Children's, their only way of communicating is crying. So babies of that age are crying because they're disgruntled, because they're hungry, because they're uncomfortable, or because they're tired, or because they're in pain. So it's not useful to interpret that every time they cry, they're traumatized or are being traumatized by it. Mm. I would think 15 or 20 minutes, and I fully appreciate, and I was that parent who really struggled to listen to a baby cry on the monitor and not go in. But I think if 15 or 20 minutes and it's not overly distressed and the child falls asleep after that, that may just be the way in which they fall asleep. And that's something that, you know, they may well improve on. That time might be getting less as they get older. But I would say to this parent is, I suppose, going in and rocking them to sleep, or getting into habits where they fall asleep in your arms, or trying to, you know, assuage the bit of time where they're disgruntled before they fall off to sleep, can develop habits that are much harder to crack in a year or two's time. Mm. So the fact that he's learning how to self-soothe, he is able to sleep, his distress is not off the charts, and it's not lasting for a very long time. I don't think she has too much to worry about here. I think this is okay, and I think he will be all right once, and hopefully, you know, the nights where he might be more difficult to settle, that might be, as I say, teeth or anything else that's going on for him. But I would think he's not being traumatized by this. Mm. Be reassured by that.
But I suppose it's hard to know where the line is if you're letting them kind of moan and groan a bit, you know, mm-hmm. the way babies make that kind of grumbling sound,
yeah,
which stops immediately you walk into the room, of course.
For sure.
Whether they're actually in some degree of distress or whether they're just like chancing their arm almost, hoping somebody will come in.
Yeah, and I guess I'm going from the email that it is more just a crying, as in a grumpy crying because he stops and talks to himself or cries intermittently. You know, that a child who's in pain or is in difficulty has a very different cry. And I think mums especially are very attuned to kind of deciphering, oh, that's a hunger cry or that's a pain cry. But
yeah,
some of the crying is just disgruntlement and trying to fall off asleep. And it takes many of us 15 or 20 minutes to fall asleep as well. And, you know, that's his way of kind of managing it. I would think if he's not overly distressed and if she can manage her own anxiety around it, that it's fine. I wouldn't imagine that he's being traumatized by that at all.
Yeah. Okay, our 20-month-old has loads of words and is generally a happy little girl, but she won't say please or thank you. She can say these words but refuses to when she's asked to. Why?
I do have a position on this, and I think I'd be very strong on children learning to say please and thank you. I think, and that's maybe my own stuff, and I'll own that. But I think a child who's polite and courteous and likeable, it goes a long way in terms of their life, you know, in terms
yes,
of
indeed.
How people respond to them, you know, in school and in sports situations, whatever it might be. So I think it's really important that a child learns to do that. But the child knows how to say it. It's just she's willfully not saying it, it would seem like this.
Mm.
You'd commonly see this in where a child calls a parent by their first name. So they might call their dad Sean or something. And
yeah.
they get to laugh the first time. And then the dad says, no, call me dad. And they continue to call you Sean. You know, so it's kind of a power thing that kind of they're owning that ability to that you can't force me to do something. And so it becomes about them just being autonomous and kind of holding their own a little bit. But in this situation, I would probably insist on a please or a thank you or prompting it before getting things. I think if a child doesn't learn those polite skills and gets complacent around that, it can be very difficult to try and teach that to a 10-year-old who's, you know, already just grabs things and doesn't say thanks or doesn't say please. And I'm willing to admit that this might be more my issue than other people might have a different view on it. But I just think the likability of children is really important, and it's a really good protective skill for them to have growing through life. I don't know whether this is about the please and thank you. I think it's more about the game that they see that
yeah,
this probably
yeah,
upsets them.
Yeah.
And so they're just exerting a little bit of autonomous power. But I'd make light of it in terms of, but I would insist on it being said. So, you know, if they've siblings who say please and thank you, give them the treat first and then, you know, kind of jokingly say, are you going to say please? Or, you know, but I wouldn't drop it for some reason. I do believe that's important.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah, I agree with you. It's kind of an unattractive thing in a child when they don't say. But only at 20 months, she's still just.
Oh yeah.
It, really,
look,
you know?
This is a very early stage thing. But I think for me, and I think a lot of parents, you know, you don't want to be the parent of those children who people see coming and go, oh, not this lot. You know, a likable child. It does. I mean, in terms of how they get on in school, how parents, teachers, other people react to them, if they're polite and courteous, it does go a long way. And it is for me, it's a really important lesson that children learn how to be mannerly. And I think it is probably important from that point. But this, as you say, it's a 20-month-old, so she's plenty of time to work out her battles in teenage years. She might choose a different way of exerting that power.
Just going back to the question about the video game, Olivier in Clare says, the problem is quite a common problem and some parents don't seem to care. In a lot of cases, the game is actually owned by the parent. I've seen this. I play Grand Theft Auto 5 regularly. When I play online, I often see children playing the game using the parent's username. I can hear them through my headset. The game is rated 18+. Another texter says, I have 11 and 12-year-old boys who pester me to buy 18 over 18s games. It's easier to say okay, but just say no. Be a parent. It's your job. It's not rocket science. Well, no, indeed, but as you accept, it is difficult. On the subject of moving house, the parent moving house, make sure the head of the school allocates a playground buddy for the 6-year-old. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah. I suppose just to get back to the game issue, I think what I've noticed is parents who are familiar with gaming, who may have grown up gaming, have a much better awareness of what those games are about and tend to be better at invigilating how what's suitable for the child or not. Perhaps parents who have no knowledge of games, you know, imagine
that's a
that
good
it's
point,
a
actually.
A,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Oh, it's like Sonic the Hedgehog, but it's quite different. And as you might know, you know, there's a very different tone to these.
Yes,
games.
And particularly in Grand Theft Auto, it's not just violence. There's loads of other stuff going on there, and even what you get points for. If you like, the moral paradigm of Grand Theft Auto is probably the reverse of what parents are trying to teach their kids. On the subject of music, I was the exact same as that kid with the music. The Little House on the Prairie music used to set me off. Still an emotional adult, but I'm a therapist now and definitely think my sensitivity is an asset. Another text that says, my 4-year-old heard Love Is All Around by Wet 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 on the radio. I asked her, did she like it? She said, it's very sad. Did somebody die or something? I nearly died laughing. Only somebody's a musical career. My husband put on the Goldberg Variations on at the weekend. My almost 2-year-old sat mesmerized listening to the piano music and sat very still and somber. When it was over, he asked for more. He was definitely tuned into it. He will equally jump up and dance around around to upbeat music. I play the piano and my husband the guitar. So lots of music in the house, hoping this is a good thing. Well, that's interesting. Mm. And someone else says, my daughter used to cry at sad music as a toddler. She's still a little bit sensitive, but otherwise can handle herself robustly in company. She's 6 now. So I suppose it's part of growing up. It's Absolutely. Part of that development, being exposed to those things. Coleman, lovely to see you again. Thanks very much for coming into us. Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.